Hello, everyone, and welcome to another special release from the live stream for The Cure 2.0. I'm, of course, Nick from the Epic Film Guys, and I'm just recording this little piece here at the beginning because I'm actually going to tack something else into this 2018 in film discussion. This is actually a cut review from episode 151, where I did a short review of the first Purge. So that we're going to go ahead and include at the end of this clip from the live stream for The Cure, talking about 2018 in film with Dan of the Netflix and Swill podcast. This was our first segment on day three. So pretty much right after we started, we jumped right into this. So please enjoy that segment. I'll be back to check in on you guys right after that. We'll take a small break and I'll probably play our Patreon commercial and then we'll finish up with that review. So on with the show. Let's talk about 2018 in film. I don't know how we're all going to feel about 2018 in film start. So
yeah, I was sitting down and writing out a list of everything I've seen so far this year, big and little, indie to big budget blockbuster, and I was coming down to the fact that I was thinking it wasn't as good as last year at this point. But I think that I just proved myself wrong by writing out the list. Surprisingly, even though we've had quite a few really weak movies we've had to watch, I think it's been a great year so far, especially for the genre, which I love and adore, that of horror. I think it's been a great year. But that's aside from the fact that we've had two, and I would assume now three, juggernaut comic book movies already so far this year.
I'm the juggernaut, bitch.
God.
Don't.
You're welcome.
Don't remind me. No.
You're welcome. I'm going to pull up. I've actually just got a list of all the movies that came out because I don't think I've seen shit this year, really, comparatively, especially not compared to you two. I know Dan's seen a ton of stuff on Netflix.
That's
been new releases. And then Justin, of course, just gets to live at the Alamo Draft House thanks to our Loy Choss, A1 Loy
Steak Sauce.
Shake yeah. Choss. Make Moss.
Dave. That salty motherfucker.
Make Moss.
He's the boss.
I told you. We just drop random nonsense words about Loy Sauce anymore. It's not even a coherent thing.
It's not. It doesn't need to be. It just doesn't need to be.
Yeah, it absolutely does not. So, gentlemen, why don't we start? Let me see here. I'm just kind of looking at, nothing came out.
Well, I know what the big first release was, at least on my radar, and actually on most people's radar, because the first big release of the year was actually The Cloverfield Paradox.
Technically, you're right, but, oh man, I totally forgot about that movie. And I knew that was going to be the case. Everybody. I think that was going to be the case. And I know that this is a conversation that we could have a whole show on because your whole show is based on watching stuff on Netflix. But how it differs watching a newly released film on Netflix compared to seeing in the theater, I think that, you know, especially that movie, people watched it. Mm-hmm. They talked about it for like a couple of days. Then it was gone.
Yeah.
And it had no impact at all, I don't think.
I think that has more to do with the actual movie itself as opposed to what it was distributed on.
I think that's 100% directly tied to its mediocrity because it was exceptionally unexceptional as a movie. I was very much looking forward to it. I think we all were because 10 Cloverfield Lane was such a great film. And
I mean, dude, they were taking the hype away from the Super Bowl at that point. Like, it was.
Oh my God, yeah.
Once we realized it was going to hit, I literally left my brother-in-law's and came home and just sat and kept refreshing Netflix on my TV. And as soon as it landed, I watched it. And then, you know, I woke up the next morning and it didn't leave an impact on me. And I guess maybe I differ in the opinion that I feel like a theatrical release, even if it wasn't as good, still would have had more of an impact because people didn't have to go anywhere or go out of their way to watch it. So the memory of seeing it was they turned on their TV, they watched it, and that's the end of it. And I mean, I think that's why I feel that the theatrical experience is more important than watching it at home. But overall, I agree with both of you, though. I think that I probably gave it more credit than other people did. I thought it was fine. But comparing it to even the first Cloverfield, which I'm not a big fan of at all, I thought it just paled in comparison. Yeah.
Just.
I think what will be remembered from that movie is just the hype levels coming off of the Super Bowl. It won't be anything else. Like, you'll never remember the plot. Basically, it's a Cloverfield universe origin story, which I don't know if I ever wanted. But, you know, seeing that trailer drop during the Super Bowl and just being like, well, fuck this game. I don't care about this shit anymore. I watched the end of it to be like, all right, it's over. Let's go to Netflix. Let's head upstairs. And I feel like everyone would have come down on it a lot more unfavorably had they actually had to go out to the theater and watch it in a theater and, you know, actually spend, like, I know people spend money on Netflix, on a Netflix subscription, but like most people are watching like The Office or Parks and Recs for like the 45th time. So you consider it as free Netflix, right. So you're watching it for free on Netflix as opposed to paying like $12 to go watch it in the theater.
You're right. I did think that it was a good movie to look at. I liked the way it looked.
It was pretty.
Yeah, there's that. It was
definitely pretty. Epic Film Frog, what did you think of the Cloverfield Paradox?
This is Epic Film Frog here, and I want to tell you, go fuck yourself. Go
fuck wow, that frog, man.
That is...
What an asshole.
Wow. Man, I did not expect that. That was strong words. Strong words.
Well, moving on from that movie, I was going to talk about another movie, Nick, that we both had the opportunity to see in theaters. Quite a bit. Oh God, I know you watched that movie. Did you watch that movie? Didn't you?
Because I went on.
Yeah, you did. I remember you did watch that movie. Yep. Okay, so all right, go ahead. Sex.
That movie in a nutshell.
There's here we sex.
Go. That was that movie in a nutshell.
But does that actually happen, though? Does someone get fisted in that?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe. I have no idea. Yes, Drew, I did just say 50 Shades. Justin from Sorry I Married a Movie Geek came on our show last year, and we talked about the first one, so we did a double feature of the other two, the two sequels to the 50 Shades on his show this past February. And Jesus Christ, those movies are terrible.
But they're sex though, right? They're sex.
I mean, yeah, you get to see.
It looks like sex no one's ever had. So it's like somebody who's never had sex is like imagining what sex is like in a movie, and they're just like, here,
the Hollywood version of sex.
The real problem is, the lead actors never ever. And they hated each other, at least when they were filming the first film, but they never had the slightest lick of chemistry. And I'm sorry, but just throwing two attractive people at each other and having one of them mostly naked all the time. What the hell? Jamie Dornan famously refused to show any shaft, despite the fact
bullshit.
That Dakota Johnson is pretty much naked in all three of those movies. And she's, you know, quite attractive, but, you know, that's all well and good. But anyway, like, they never had the on-screen chemistry to sell that romance, which is like, that's what you're trying to sell the entire time. So wait a minute. I got to find something here.
I got something for your ass. Don't someone mess with time.
You don't time. You don't with time. Time.
That was actual audio of Christian Grey and Anna having sex in one of the movies. So
I believe it.
Justin, to move on to something different that you were going to talk about, please.
Yeah, I was going to talk about Alex Garland's Annihilation, a movie that polarized audiences. A lot of people walked out either really loving that movie, being confused by it, or just outright hating it. I had the experience where I saw an advanced screening of the movie, and I walked out not really knowing how to feel. But the one thing I walked away with was that it made me think, and I could not stop thinking about that movie for like 3 days. So I said, this is one I have to experience a second time. And upon my second viewing, I fell in love with the film. I know you had some problems with it, which you'll probably get into in a few moments, but I thought it was a visionary behind that movie that made it so special. I loved the look of the movie, and I loved the idea of the movie. And I always think about what movies should be, what cinema should be, and they should be conversation starters. They should be something that, whether you like it or hate it, you could sit down, have a coffee or a beer, and you could just talk about it and discuss how the film made you feel, how you related to it. And that's what Annihilation did for me, I think.
And I know Dan actually, because this was ostensibly a Netflix film outside of the United States.
Yes. In the UK, right?
Everywhere else. Everywhere, but
US, where, UK, and China, I think, were theatrical, but everywhere else
around the world was.
Which is Netflix. Hilarious when you consider that probably everywhere else in the world would appreciate Annihilation more than those three markets.
But Dan, how did you feel about Annihilation? You know, I'm trying to think. I'll be 100% honest. I can't remember all that much about it anymore, except for
that's because you were in the Shimmer. You were in the Shimmer. You can't
was
remember.
Was I in
anything.
The Shimmer? Am that's I just right. like in shell shock now? Like,
other than the narrative device, I really enjoyed Annihilation. I actually fell in love with, wait for it, a score piece from the movie. basically the entire lighthouse sequence, that backing track, beautiful, gorgeous, love it. Probably my favorite score piece ever, because I don't recognize score pieces in general, so whatever. I enjoyed that movie. I had to pirate the first copy because it was out of theaters in my area by the time I got to it.
That sucks, man.
But I did go see it in an Alamo Draft House with Ashley. I forced her to go. I was like, we're going to see this in the motherfucking theaters. I want to hear sound design and everything.
And
in the theater.
If you saw it at Alamo, you got to see it on 4K then.
No, I don't think this. I don't think this specific Alamo had 4K.
What? What? Because every Alamo I've been to, they have like a plaque on the wall near this. It says 4K on it. So you didn't get to see it in 4K? That sucks, man.
Nope. But I can't wait to get the 4K Blu-ray.
You probably would have taken too, a photo
man.
Next
Best
to the
Buy exclusive. 4K.
But yeah, Dan, you actually, Dan, thank you for reminding me of the thing that I utterly despised about that film was that fucking framing device.
Terrible.
After the fact, after the fact of the event, going through that goddamn interview, just 100% every time they cut back to that, completely just took me out of that film.
Just tell the story chronologically. Yeah,
just tell the goddamn story as it was. You don't need to have these goddamn flashbacks. With the interview, you don't need to have the interview as a framing device for the whole goddamn thing. I felt, frankly, it added absolutely nothing to the film. I mean, Loy Sauce did mention when we reviewed it that it kind of helps to highlight what Alex Garland was going for thematically.
It does.
But
it does. Yeah.
The film
I didn't
not
have a
need the framing
it.
Device whatsoever. It was really, really distracting. And for as much as a fan of Alex Garland as I am, utterly hated that. So I think I barely passed that movie. I think I barely passed it because of that.
No, you liked it. You liked it.
I wound up being more forgiving.
I'm saying my grade was like barely passing because of that.
I mean, it's such an undertaking that went into making that movie. And just thinking about the script, the idea of what that movie is enough for me to give it tons of kudos. Just because you don't, in the world of blockbusters and big budget nonsense we get every fucking month, you know, for me, I appreciate a filmmaker such as Garland doing something different. And trying to make you think and trying to, like, what are you taking away from this movie? When you go to see these big budget movies, you're going in to get entertained. With that movie, he wanted you to walk out not necessarily knowing how you felt, but later on thinking about that. And it's an experience. And that, for me, is very special.
This is Epic Film Frog here, and I want to tell you, go fuck yourself.
How does he keep getting in here?
I don't know, damn it.
Blame you. Damn frog.
Well, I don't want any frogs here.
From frogs, I think we now have to move over to talk about panthers.
Cats.
Kitty cats.
I'm going to throw it over to you, Dan. I want to know what you thought of Black Panther.
Fist yourself!
Exactly. You nailed it. Black Panther, worst movie of all time. Black Panther was, for the most part, a very enjoyable cinematic experience. The only exception to that, obviously, is the same thing that everyone hates, is the ending fight, which is fucking CGI-laden and very video game. Even I will complain about it being too video gamey. It felt like a series of quick time events and where it's like, okay, now you're going to pull this fucking vibranium thing that will force the thing, and now you're going to shove the spike through his heart, and he's dead. Like,
Ladies and gentlemen.
Obviously, the very end. Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Loisloss.
In the chat. The god of podcasting.
He could have been in here, but he's too lazy to get on his setup and jump in, so.
God,
but thanks for being in the chat, Saucy.
Loisloss, you're still my favorite podcaster of the year so far. I'm sorry, Dan. Continue.
But yeah, like, other than that CGI laden garbage fest, it's a very emotional movie. You know, it finally gives it. It gave us another great Marvel villain in Killmonger. Obviously, Dan has a big soft spot for Vulture. Other people have a big soft spot for Hela. Cool. But this, it really showed that Marvel in Phase 3 specifically was looking to really kind of reinvigorate their villains and actually make their villains good.
I agree with that 100%. And I think that's one of my favorite things about Phase 3 so far. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I still prefer Killmonger a lot more than Thanos. I love Michael B. Jordan. And it's not just because I got to stand next to him for 5 hours and like be in a movie with the dude.
Oh, good for you.
Come on. You also got his autograph. Come on.
I did. You're right. And he was really cool. And he did do the whole, you know, the glove pump thing that boxers do. So, I mean, it was really awesome. But for me, like, I just think he's a great, talented dude. I think he's one of the best young actors out there right now. And I cared way more about his character in that movie than anything else going on. And I think that, again, that I was appreciative of that because the Epic Film guys were known for having a huge issue with villains in Marvel movies. And like you just said, Dan, Hela from Thor Ragnarok, I thought she was pretty good. And I loved Michael Keaton as Vulture. A lot of people didn't, but I thought he was fantastic.
Who are those people? Who do I need to go fight right now?
Cobra. Cobra from Afterbirth 739, but for whatever reason, he just doesn't like Michael Keaton. For whatever reason,
Fine. If you don't like Michael Keaton, whatever.
But I 100% agree because Marvel Phase 2, and I'll be 100% honest here, is Marvel phoning it in hard fucking core. Iron Man 3 is. You have Guardians of the Galaxy, which everybody else in the world loves, but I think is garbage. You've got Thor the Dark World, which is reprehensible. Age of Ultron, which is just shit. The worst villains, like even when you can say that the films were good, like even for those people that love Guardians, you can't deny that Ronan the Accused
Ronan's terrible.
Garbage. Utterly.
Which I can't wait for him to come back.
He's coming back.
He'll be in Captain Marvel. Yep. So... Yeah,
I can't wait. I don't care about that character at all.
It's it's really, really just interesting. But you know, once they got to Phase 3, they kind of untethered just a little bit. They kind of started letting these directors get a little bit more creative. These films started to gain a little bit more of their own visual aesthetic, their own visual style. Black Panther production design wise alone is just gorgeous,
beautiful, Absolutely beautiful. To look at.
The problem with that film, and it's a comic book movie trope at this point that you have to have a big, massive CGI brawl at the end of it. It's just the way that literally Marvel, DC, doesn't matter. That's the way they all end, is with some overblown, shitty CGI action fest. Think Wonder Woman. Yeah. Same goddamn thing. Giant, overblown piece of shit CGI action set piece. So,
Could you just imagine... Sorry, real quick, with Wonder Woman, could you just imagine she kills the general at the end, nothing happens, and she's just like, oh, mankind are just fucked up for no reason. I'm out of here. Deuces, everybody. And that movie ends that way. Perfect ending. Perfect ending.
And the problem is that it doesn't even make sense with the continuity that they had established before in the DCEU, because they were like, oh, well, you know, I'm walked away from mankind for 100 years and then now I came back. But that movie ends with, like, you know, her boyfriend, Steve Trevor, sacrificing himself and everything. And you know, she seems relatively self-assured to help humanity. And then just whatever. But then again, the DCEU is such a gigantic clusterfuck and shit show. This is what happens when you take creative control out of one person's hands and then you throw it into a committee's hands and then you take it from that committee's hands and then you throw it into someone else's hands and fuck the DCEU. Fuck everything about the DCEU.
But thanks, we have not had a movie in the DCEU this year yet.
I do want to talk about something with Marvel, and I do appreciate it because you did kind of touch on it, Nick, but When you have such a sure thing as the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you can go one of two routes. One is Marvel Phase 2, where you phone it in, or two, you can go heavy into experimentation and kind of let directors, you know, showcase themselves. And I really appreciate the direction that they took for Marvel Phase 3, which was allowing the directors to showcase themselves and take bigger risks. Because Thor, fuck, no one cared about Thor
at
before,
all.
At all. Before Ragnarok. And now, with Ragnarok and Infinity War, people fucking love Thor so much. It's all because of the chances they allowed them to take.
I agree.
Taika Waititi did a great job in that movie.
I think so. I definitely think so. And they took a character out of his element a little bit, because when you think of Thor, you don't think of Thor the way that he's portrayed in that movie. But for me, I actually think I probably prefer Ragnarok to the previous two Thor, definitely over the Dark World.
Because
we all know how I feel about that one. But I definitely think they're on a roll. Now, do I still feel the same way about the fact that they are all kind of the same? Yeah, sure. And do I get as excited as I used to for them? Definitely not. We're going to get to this one. We might as well just jump in while we're here, even though we're moving ahead. Infinity War, you know, for me, like, I definitely liked it a lot. I had a few issues with it. I thought it was, for the most part, a really good movie. But I also don't buy into the hype. A lot of people are like, it's the best movie of all time. I see people that are going to see it five or six times, and rightly so. It's totally their prerogative if that's something that they love enough to want to see that many times. But for me, it's still just another Marvel movie with great action set pieces. I think it is more emotional. I thought Thanos was a pretty good villain. I think there's a little bit more they could have done with that. Mm-hmm. But again, they're on a roll with they're going uphill. They're not going downhill. So for me, at least, as a viewer of their films, I think that I'm more excited about what's to come. But Black Panther was definitely a standout for me this year. I loved that movie quite a bit. So for more than one reason.
I mean, I wouldn't say they were going downhill in one regard or another. I would say that they're just staying on the same goddamn.
Well, with phase two, Nick.
Yeah, definitely. We had phase two, but I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
The biggest problem with Infinity War, and we talked about it even yesterday a little bit when we mentioned it and when we did our review, most certainly, was just, you know, you had the opportunity to really give that movie a gigantic, dramatic punch to the dick, and they just, you're like, nah, never mind, and took it back. And people are all like freaking out about the finger snap and everything like that, and all those characters are coming back. We know everybody's coming back.
So comic books, dude. I've been waiting for this moment. I've been waiting for a very comic book movie, and I know that, like, we already have comic book movies, but what I mean is they do this thing right before a big event where they wipe out like half the team, which they did at the end of Infinity War. They wipe out half the team, and now somehow the other half of the fucking jumbled mess of a team that you have left has to go beat the guy that the full team couldn't beat. So I'm really excited for Infinity War sequel movie, because it's just gonna be full comic book, and I'm going to love it. But I know a lot of people will not love full comic book.
And Brentley just said over in the chat, did you see Infinity War lost to Deadpool in the box office? I did not see Deadpool.
That was a given, though.
Opening box office numbers.
That was a given for me. Deadpool 2 had a lot of hype leading up to it, and Infinity War was already number one for 3 weeks in a row.
Well, Deadpool was already the number one grossing R-rated movie of all time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So there was definitely a lot of hype leading up to that. The promotion for that movie, the marketing for Deadpool 2 has been outstanding. Literally, they have that down packed. Like, literally, some of the best movie marketing ever.
The DVD covers, like all the different movies.
Dude, at Best Buy, they all have Deadpool covers. That's a real thing. That's not
Deadpool on it.
It's amazing. Like, what other movie could you see taking over like that? Ryan Reynolds has just created this iconic character.
A little bit too far. Some people think it's maybe a little bit like whatever, but I think it matches kind of perfectly with Deadpool's
character. It matches the character.
That's definitely something that Deadpool would do.
Yeah. So, and I
love it.
I'll go back to what I just said. When I say he created this iconic character, I know he didn't actually create the character, but I think it took someone as talented as him, and I think he was born for this role, to jump into that role and really make it as iconic as it is. Because let's face it, outside of comic book fans, you know, hardcore nerds and stuff, like, Deadpool has always been popular in the nerd realm, but like outside people, you know, regular GA, they may have heard the name Deadpool, but it's not like you saw people walk around with Deadpool shirts. Now it's such a huge cultural thing. I see people wearing Deadpool shirts at the grocery store. I mean, it's huge, and rightly so. It's amazing.
I love it. I love it so
much. Can't wait to see it. Hopefully tonight, man. Hopefully tonight.
Yeah, I have a ticket for 7 o'clock. I have a ticket for 7 o'clock tonight. So we're going to see how dead I am by the time I finish the last day of live stream for the Q 2.0. I'll be 100% honest. I may cancel that ticket and just hit the hay tonight.
Well, Nick, are we still recording tomorrow or did you want to push it to a Tuesday?
Nope. If I skip it tonight, I will see it tomorrow after work. I'll go tomorrow after work, but I'm questioning whether or not I should go see
what I'm saying is if we pushed recording a regular episode to Tuesday, that'd probably be better for me because I'm going to Alamo tomorrow, but it's actually for a commemoration event for Margot Kidder. It's a screening of Richard Donner's Superman. So I couldn't pass that up.
Nobody's ever seen that movie.
I've never seen it.
Is it the 3-hour version?
No, I wish. It's whatever Lois Haas could book within the time period that he had to book it. So I assume it's just a regular theatrical.
Check. Sound check.
Why is he doing sound checks, Lois Haas? We've been on the air for a fucking hour.
Where the hell is he? Is he just hiding in there?
Chat. He's hanging out in the chat. He's chatting.
I know.
And Drew's in there. Leni from Talk Spooky is in there. She said Deadpool 2 is well worth the lack of sleep. I don't doubt that. I definitely don't doubt that. But my lack of sleep is exceptionally higher. Yeah, we can, if you want, Justin, we can push a normal recording until Tuesday. That I'm fine with. I could use a day to just kind of...
That's what I was thinking. Okay, so set in stone. There it is. Lois, I don't know about tomorrow night, but we'll see.
After a while.
I'll work it out.
We've got, like I said, we've got our Harry Potter spotlight to play a little bit later today in the stream. Actually, I'm going to do some Angry Old Man stuff, some pre-recorded Angry Old Man stuff coming up next on the stream. But we're not done talking about 2018 in film.
No.
We did skip ahead to Infinity War. I don't necessarily know if anybody else has anything else to say about that, do they?
That movie's been talked about to death. Anything that I could say would be just reiterating somebody else's opinion.
And I would just be repeating myself from our episode and what we talked about last night. So I feel like we should jump over to another film that was a huge hit, a film that I loved, a film that you caught a bunch of shit for critiquing, Nick, which I found hilarious. I actually had people texting me and calling me and going, dude, what is he talking about? So you caused a stir with your opinion on A Quiet Place.
Ooh, I caused a stir with my opinion of a movie. Amazing.
You did.
Amazing.
You did.
You want to know what's funny?
Why don't I remember this?
What's funny is I heard as much support as I heard shit about it. Some people laughed and some people made fun of me for it. Other people completely agreed with me and were like, but like I said, it doesn't take me out of the movie though. I still gave that movie an 8 out of 10. It's still one of my highest rated movies of the year so far. I really, really enjoyed that movie, but yeah.
I thought you said in our review that it did take you out of the movie.
Well, that's why I gave it an 8 out of 10 as opposed to like a 9, but that only knocked it 1 point. It didn't affect my rating as much as something like, say, you know, Thanos and, you know, Marvel not having the balls to finally just actually do something, you know, that affected my rating of that film a lot more than, you know, A Quiet Place's issues did. I still loved A Quiet Place. It was still good enough in all of its other parts to completely, you know, save the rest of it for me. It's just like I said, I just go move next to the fucking waterfall.
I know what you're saying, but you would never realistically, and I know it's not a realistic type of movie, but you would never take your whole family, leave the home that we've lived in.
100%.
We're living in the cave. We're living in the fucking cave,
exactly,
man. But no, I mean, I went when we started this segment, I mentioned that I think for me, my favorite genre, which is horror, has been knocking them out of the park so far this year. And I think A Quiet Place is one of the best horror suspense films.
Yeah, definitely one of the best films of the year so far.
The whole idea, when you think about the concept, is brilliant.
Check, sound check.
I know he agrees. Loisau's got to see Death Wish. Thank God he's not on here, so we don't have to hear him talk about it.
Oh, God. I wish he was on here to talk about Death Wish, because it's funny, when I was listening to the Postmortem podcast with Mickey Harris, Eli Roth was on there and talking about how he approached making Death Wish, and he said he wanted to make it like a lavish Italian giallo film, and it doesn't look anything like that. Even from the trailers, you can tell that. But I don't want to talk about Death Wish.
What that means.
I think it's just him wanting to use buzzwords.
Probably. He thinks he's good, but it is what it is. But yeah, A Quiet Place. I mean, I walked out of this movie like in awe over it. And it was one of the only theater experiences where the title of the film matched my experience. I mean, Alamo Drafthouse, you know, Dan, from being there now, and you've been there as well, Nick. When you walk in, you can't be late. You have to be quiet, no phones, nothing. And it's silent, but you eat at Alamo Drafthouse, you drink. And I saw people sitting near me that ordered like popcorn and wings. And during the movie, you could hear a pin fucking drop. Like no one wanted to make any sound because there's no sound in the movie. Like it's very quiet. The experience is silence.
Yeah, that experience paying was attention better for it too.
I do have one critique, and it is about the score. And I do wish there was a cut without a score to this movie. I feel like musical swells in the movie really detracted from the experience. I want to be able to feel the same terror they're feeling. I want there to be just pure silence. And when there is sound, I want to feel fear for these people. So hearing music just coming out of nowhere, to me, felt very out of place for what was a very good movie.
Justin, I mean, I know what you mean.
Oh, you saw it. Never mind. I was going to say, you saw Loisos in the chat swearing he's going to make a video running down all 45 movies.
I know, and I said, I'll believe it when I see it. He says he's going to do videos.
We're going to spank you.
But what I was going to say, Dan, is I totally get where you're coming from. It would be a very interesting way to view the film, but no studio will ever allow a movie to not have music unless it's a totally silent movie. Yeah, I mean, and I know what you mean, but I personally cool liked
that for the Blu-ray,
the swelling
though, like
of music.
If they released a no music cut. Like on the interesting like, as an alternate version.
Well, because
like
this is a movie, and think of it this way: this movie was a huge hit, right?
Yeah.
And this is one of the first movies where you get very little dialogue, and the characters are all doing sign language, and people actually liked it, which is to me because people always complain. I don't watch movies with the subtitles. I hate that. Like a lot of people just won't do it. They're stubborn about it. I have no problem.
A lot of people are dumb,
but. Well, of course, but I'm just saying the GA went out in droves to see this movie and loved it. And to me, it was surprising. And I'm really happy about it because that means people are being more open-minded to different things in movies. And I love the fact that they actually, when Krasinski was set to direct the movie, he said, I'll only do this if you get me a deaf actress. Like, we can't do this movie because otherwise it'll look fake. It'll be wrong. We can't pretend we're doing sign language. We have to do it for real, and we have to do it with someone that knows it and lives it. And I thought that was one of the special things about the movie, that we had a young, very talented, amazing actress who is deaf. And I think that added an additional realism to the movie.
Yep. Absolutely agreed. And I think it's like I said, it's incredibly haunting. It's incredibly atmospheric. And like I said, it's definitely one of the best movies of the year. Even with my faults with it, I still can't knock it down enough to take it out of that conversation and probably still be in my top 10 of the year, I would imagine, unless the rest of this year really, really starts knocking it out of the park. But unfortunately, when you start releasing films like Tomb Raider, you're not going to get there.
Oh, we're going to talk about Tomb Raider. Poor Alicia Vikander. Just to say it, I think she was great in the film. I thought she was fantastic.
She was good in the role. Yeah, she definitely was.
You know, I think that for me, I know, Dan, you've played the games. You know a lot about the games. You've mentioned that to me on social media before. I personally look at her as Lara Croft. I don't even think of Angelina Jolie as Lara Croft. That doesn't connect to me. I thought she was great in the role. But what did you think, man?
Oh, I didn't even see it.
Oh, you didn't see it? Come on.
I don't watch video game movies. I just refuse. They can't do the genre correctly. So what's even the point? Hey, I got an idea. Let's take a 10-hour story and condense it into 2 hours. Okay, good job. It didn't work. I can't imagine why, everybody.
The sad thing is that even in the modern world of, you can go on YouTube right now and you can watch a 2-hour video game cutscene movie. Legitimately, you can watch the entire story of a video game cut together as a movie, and it's 10 times better than anything that Hollywood has put out in the genre to date. And that is really, really sad, because it's kind of like Dan said, there was those attempts for decades in the genre, but now even the video games have become so much more cinematic and have that like that directly translatable ability, they still can't fucking get it right. And this movie was just
But I think it was fun, though. I really do think it was just a fun little action adventure movie.
It was nothing really all
well,
that
like you had said,
great either.
Well, like what you said, Dan, what you said, Nick, originally was, and I agreed with this after I thought about it, more raiding in tombs. more tomb raiding, because there's the only tomb raiding is at the end of the movie, which I thought was very well done. Like, I liken it to
production
the sequel to
fantastic
The Mummy. I like The Mummy. I like Stephen Sommers' The Mummy a lot. I think it's a great, fun action adventure movie. And I think this is in the same vein as far as the tone. It's silly in parts. There's great action set pieces. And I think we had a great, strong female lead. I should just say, I'm sorry.
The shit out of
a strong, lead in general. Sorry, I'm not trying to be sexist or anything, but no, she was great. She was badass. We got to see her hanging off of planes about to go over amazing waterfalls, and and she literally did a lot of her stunts, and she looked buff and strong. And you know, I mean, for me, that's what really made the movie, and I walked out pretty happy. I mean, I knew from experience watching video game movies not to expect anything mind-blowing, and I was happy walking out. I don't think it's going to be that memorable. I don't know if I'm going to be buying the Ultra HD 4K Blu-ray to watch a second viewing of, but I'm interested to see if they'd go with a sequel. I know it didn't make enough to get a sequel. It actually didn't do well at all. So,
shocking.
Criminal misuse of the Goggins as well. And he was great in the movie for what they gave him to do. But then when you basically like relegate him to just kind of standing around for half of the movie, like,
but he's menacing as fuck in that movie, dude. Let's face it. He was really menacing in
that
movie.
They make him menacing as fuck, but then after he's menacing as fuck, they just make him hang out in the background for a while. And then, you know, at the end, it's just like,
dude, there's a pretty, the fight scene, though, between him and Lara at the end was pretty badass. I really enjoyed that. Yeah, I liked the fight scene. Yeah.
But that's the problem with the movie, is it was just, I think I rated it maybe a 6. I don't think I gave it a 7.
Again, still fun popcorn action movie, but I'm going to jump into another movie that you loved, Nick, that was a great action blockbuster that I know that you can't wait to pre-order on Blu-ray. I think you're actually going to buy a 4K setup just to watch this movie. We're talking about Pacific Rim Uprising. Come on.
Don't play it.
Come on.
Don't play it.
Come on. Okay, he's not quite there. Nick's Hulk is not emerging. He's not turning green.
No. I hated it. I utterly
not quite there.
Completely hated and despised. No, fuck that movie. I don't even like the first movie. Like, I love the robot kaiju action in the first movie. Charlie Hunnam completely destroys everything about that rest of that movie for me. And what they do in the sequel is they get an inferior director who basically, and like all the robots, like all the stupid, like whatever, are all the same. They're exactly the goddamn same robot. And then like the Jaegers, like I hate it. Just fuck this movie. Fuck you, Pacific Rim. I wish this franchise would fucking go away and die. Gah.
Well, I think it might. But I was surprised that we were getting a sequel anyway when the first film did not do all that well at the box office. I know on home video sales it did really well. We both didn't like the first one.
Barely scratched out enough to get somebody at least interested in putting up.
I take it
to make another one.
I take it, Dan, you didn't see it.
Nope, skipped it. I wanted to go with Corey. Corey and I went to see the first Pacific Rim. We really enjoyed it just for dumb robot shit. Like, obviously the human element I totally ignored and have blocked out, but all the robot kaiju fights were awesome. And then we just didn't want to see the second one, so I just didn't see the second one. It's fine.
I think that they realized the whole human element in the first one when they, even though they tried badly with Charlie Hunnam, they realized that people weren't really even going in for the human elements. Like, okay, John Boyega is hot right now. People like him from the Star Wars movies. Let's throw him in the lead. And let's get Scott Eastwood in there, who was pretty okay in the movie. Mm-hmm. Even though Boyega is fine, he's got some charisma in the role. They don't write these characters for you to care about them. It definitely plays more like a Transformers sequel than its own thing. But personally, I did like all of the action sequences. I know Nick didn't care for them. They definitely dropped that whole real time, real weight feel of the original, where, you know, the Jaegers are taking a slow punch because that's how long it would take for something that big to punch a kaiju. But I thought the whole action sequence at the end, the whole fight in the city, while very Transformers-like, was more entertaining than anything I've seen in a Transformers movie. So I gave it that much. And I really always love the kaiju design that they do in these movies. I think it's really different from what we've seen in other movies. So as a big monster movie fan, I liked that element. But God, they can't get the human element right in these movies at all. So
yeah, no, then they replace the utterly talentless Charlie Hunnam with the utterly talented John Boyega, and they waste it.
But
they still can't get it right.
They waste. Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen,
you also made Charlie Day your fucking main villain.
They did. Oh my god. And I like Charlie Day. I like him in Always Sunny. That's literally all I like him in, though. And And the what the hell are they?
Horrible Bosses.
Yep. I like him in those movies too.
All right, and ladies and gentlemen, please don't forget we are just a little bit under $700, so about $690-ish away from our goal of $5,000. You can donate down below on Twitch. Hit that big red donate now button on YouTube. It is down in the description below. We're going to be wrapping this up in about 5 minutes or so because I forgot. We actually spilled over into the quote-unquote restaurant cooking segment time where I was going to play some pre-recorded stuff. We've got Talk Spooky coming on in about 20 minutes, and Dan, I'm going to have you do a sound check with them, make sure they're okay.
Yeah.
Once we wrap up here. So anything else? I know there's one more big release that we have to talk about.
Ready Player One.
Yeah.
Dude, I totally forgot about it. I really did. And that's unfortunate because I love Spielberg. He's one of my favorite directors. And while there were elements of that movie that I did like overall, it's so forgettable to me. And that's why I forgot about it.
I mean, pretty much anything Spielberg would have done would have been better than the book. The book is an atrocity upon humankind. So coming out of the movie, I was like, I don't know why, but I was pleasantly surprised, and I shouldn't have been, because, you know, you could have done infinite things and improved on the fucking piece of shit book that exists.
Yeah, that's the subject that both you and Loisos agree on with the book.
The biggest problem, once again, with that film remains that it's a film that purports to be made for gamers, but it most clearly was not made by gamers, because game ever in the history of mankind has nobody just turned around and gone backwards just for the fuck of it, just because.
5 years.
You're 5 years. Nobody just accidentally went the wrong way on the racetrack. That's the stupidest goddamn bunch of bullshit I've ever seen in my fucking life.
No, Drew, because I'll tell you why the novel isn't fantastic. It's because it's like, hey, remember D&D? Remember Galaga? Remember these 80s properties? Hey, Ernest Cline semen all dripping from the fucking pages of the book. Oh, my God. It was just so masturbatory.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm a huge fan of everything retro. I live and breathe 80s. You guys know that. Those of you in the stream, most of you already know that. So for me, you know, it's just throwing shit on the wall. Okay, we see a fly poster on the wall. Okay. Mm-hmm. But it was just overload for me, and none of it meant anything.
The better thing about huge the film is that it doesn't really dwell, for me anyway, it doesn't really dwell on any of that nostalgia stuff.
It doesn't dwell there,
and it just moves through it really quickly in the background. It's not something that, like in the book, it's like they dedicate like however many pages to
That's how the movie improves on it, because it's not he's not throwing it in your face. It's just kind of there, and I appreciated that.
I mean, like, for me, the problem is at the end, we see this huge battle with all these different characters, and it's like, oh, there's Freddy Krueger for 2 seconds. Okay, who cares? Oh, there's Chucky for 2 seconds. All right, who cares? The only cameo from a big character, retro character that I liked was Mechagodzilla. Yeah. I thought that was awesome, actually. I thought that was really cool. Lit up, and I thought it was pretty neat. But other than that, I fucked this up the other day. Weissauce corrected me. We had Ben Mendelsohn as the main villain, playing a weaker villain than he was in Rogue One, which he was fantastic in. I get it. It felt like a generic 80s movie villain. And I think that's what they were going for, which they nailed it with that. But I didn't connect with the characters. And when they went into the game world and all these characters were just CGI cartoons, and I didn't really particularly like the way they designed them either. It just looked like I was watching a video game. I couldn't connect emotionally with the characters, and our main character I thought was lackluster. I didn't care about him at all. You didn't give me enough reason.
Wasn't great.
Yeah, no, he wasn't good. And like I said, miss for me, unfortunately. I thought Spielberg did a pretty good job of what he had in front of him, but overall, it's just not anything that I personally liked.
What is Loisos trying to send me here? Not right now, Loisos, but later I can play a video, but I gotta have a chance to download it and whatnot. But I mean, yeah, I mean, Ready Player One was unfortunately just not. It was just eh.
You gave it a higher rating than I did, Nick. Though you
I did because
seemed to like it a lot more than I did.
The gaming sensibilities in it that it has in there, like, just I saw all the random characters that I recognized, and I just kind of thought of like a microtransaction. Like if you're in a server for a large game where people buy different skins, that's all I saw it as. I didn't see it as anything else of, you know, why I should care about the characters that I see or whatever. So those aspects of it didn't bother me as much as they bothered you. I think that's why I was a little bit hotter on it. But then again, like I said, it clearly not made by anyone who's ever played a fucking video game in their life, because nobody ever
I'm so mad about that.
Have not gone backwards at the start of that fucking race just accidentally, number one, or B, just because they would have been like, fuck you, I'm going backwards.
Herder.
Before we wrap up this segment, I did want to mention a few smaller films that I really enjoyed and really loved, films. I'm not sure how you felt about this one, Dan, but The Ritual, which was a Netflix original movie, I loved that movie a lot. We had The Endless, which I just saw last week. Of course, we talked about A Quiet Place. And I also really, really enjoyed Strangers Pray at Night, the sequel to the fan favorite cult slasher film from like 10 years ago. I thought it was really fun. I thought it was enjoyable. So those are those movies. And Game Night, too. Breakout Comedy, which I didn't expect to like all that much. I really walked out entertained from that one with Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams. So I think overall, upon looking at this list, I'm having a good year so far.
Well, I do want to hit on some Netflix original stuff. So The Ritual, sure. I wasn't as hot on it. I do like the creature design, but I felt like everything else was just kind of ugh.
But dude, come on, the atmosphere and suspense in that? I thought it would have built up pretty well.
No.
Loisos, DM me the link to that. Send that link to me on Facebook. DM that link to me on Facebook so I can download it. I'll play it later on the stream. I'm not even sure what it is.
Mute, the Duncan Jones vehicle, garbage. Full Metal Alchemist, it's an anime movie, therefore it's garbage. Game Over Man was fine. Whatever. The Titan, starring Sam Worthington, pure fucking trash. And now we're getting into stuff that's actually, you know, good. Roxanne. It's about I can't remember the character's name now, but it's a true story about a young black hip hop artist who's a girl back in the 80s. Very good. Kodachrome, the thing I will always fucking talk about. It's Netflix's best so far this year. Orbiter 9, kind of garbage. Ravenous, disappointing. First Match, which is about a girl whose father's come back into her life, and so she tries to get into amateur wrestling in order to reconnect with him. Very good. Six Balloons, starring Abby Jacobson and Dave Franco, also very good. The Week Of was fine. Dude, pretty decent movie. Very shocking because it kind of portrays itself as a comedy movie, but it's really not a comedy movie. And then Before I Wake, which was released this year. I know it was originally released in 2016, but it was set for mass release here in 2018, which was also just fine.
Just fine, because that's on my list right now to watch. But not to cut you off there, Dan, but Loisos did remind me a few other movies that I did not mention. Isle of Dogs, which I did really enjoy a lot. Wes Anderson movie. I know it did get up your way, right, Nick? But you didn't get a chance to see it.
It did, but it was here for about a week, and
yeah,
I forget what was going on that week that I was really busy with. I can't remember. But yeah, it was here legitimately playing for like a week, like a month after it first came out, and it was here for like a week, but I couldn't get to the theater to fucking see it because fuck this area.
I know, right?
In the ass.
There was also another one, Loisos probably liked it a lot more than me, but it was You Were Never Really Here. It was a sleeper thriller starring Joaquin Phoenix, where he goes in, he's like a hired gun to kill people. I liked a lot about that movie. It has a great atmosphere, and Phoenix is brilliant, and it just makes me want to watch more movies with him in it. But overall, I walked away somewhat unsatisfied because I'm a gore hound, and when you don't show the gore or people getting smashed in the head with a hammer, when their poster of your movie has a guy holding a hammer, it's a little disappointing for me as a viewer. But I get why they're not trying to glorify the violence in it. Overall, though, I think this segment could have gone on for 2 to 3 hours because there have been so many movies that we've all seen. You, Dan, you on Netflix and Swill, you cover everything Netflix, and half of those movies I never even pay attention to be totally honest with you, unless they get buzzed. So
yeah, you and everybody else. So I don't take it personally,
but I mean, I do love what they're doing. Honestly, I think that it's a interesting way to make movies, and they're putting budgets into them too. It's not like they're giving no budget. Like, they look decent, they're slick looking, mm-hmm. and they're doing different things with them. So, but overall,
the whole thing with Netflix is like, sometimes when they're doing their own productions, like Netflix is like a director's wet dream, because it's like they just let the director do whatever. Right. And for the most part, for the director, that's good. For the viewing audience, typically it's not very good, because they need somebody to say to this director, hey, are you sure you want to do this? Because I don't think this is actually working out. You probably should just, you know, reshoot this or do something else with it. So it's a double-edged sword what Netflix offers to directors.
Hey, thank you so much, guys. That was 2018 in film. Now, obviously, that's 2018 in film up to May. We've obviously seen a lot of different films since then, and you can check out all those reviews in the last month and a half, 2 months worth of episodes of the Epic Film Guys podcast. Thank you very much for listening. We really, really appreciate it. So I'm going to jump into a very quick break here, and then we're going to roll into that quick review. It's about 10 minutes, give or take, of the first Purge. Stay tuned. Welcome, everyone, and check out this sneak peek for our patron-only segment. Remember, for just $1 a month, you can get access to our 5 most recent extended episodes, as well as all of our other bonus content, and you get access to tons of free swag that we send out to our patrons all the time. So let's roll that clip. In the wintertime, they should sell little fur coats for your nuts. It's called Toasty Nuts. And then the picture on the package can just be your testicles just smiling all warm, and then your dick just drooping down, being all sad because it's cold.
Dude, I just imagine the nuts hanging out of the bottom of a coat, but there's like fur around the dick. I don't know.
Yeah, we need to get
like a fur coat.
We need to get the EFG merchandising department on this.
Yeah,
Epic Film Guys with the fur coat.
Oh yeah, we want a dick on our next shirt.
The kids we were talking love about this one.
Doing some new merchandise, so that's right up our alley. Mm-hmm. Even though now that the soundboard is not functional for the time being, we won't be hearing about how many dicks have been sucked lately, unless you specifically state it on the show.
Well, we already know how many dicks have been sucked lately. It doesn't need to be said for it to be understood.
So, Brian, how many have you?
Is that a serious question that you want me to answer, or?
I mean, feel free. This is it's an open platform.
I'll literally upload only the soundbite that he's about to say as the entire show. Repeated 25 times.
No pressure. This is what our patrons, they get stuff like where we talk about the possibility of real dick talk.
That is true.
Not just the over-exaggerated fun dick talk, but like the real true dick talk.
The A1 Loy socks.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, baby.
Are Loy socks like ankle socks, or are they those high knee socks?
They're like Argyle socks.
I feel like if they're Loy socks, they've got to be like thigh highs. So they're getting up there and they're kind of encroaching in on your testicle territory.
Sure.
I mean, that's
they're basically just glorified leggings.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what you'd like to do, right? You like to get up and hug near the balls, dude, right?
Uh-huh.
Isn't there like a fetish that certain people have? I forget what it's called, where like they only watch porn with people with long socks on.
What?
Yeah, it's a thing.
Like I've never heard.
They have to be wearing long socks or something.
I've never heard such a thing.
He says this because he's produced a series of videos of him masturbating in nothing but long socks.
But yeah, but then you take off the long sock when you're finished so you can clean up, right?
Oh, that's handy.
Yeah.
So you might need big socks.
I mean, it has to be a long sock, right? It can't be a small sock.
It's a lot of cum.
That's a lot of cum. Hi, patrons.
Yo, welcome. Dude, we're totally
welcome to the.
If you still had the soundboard, you'd probably like have the clip of me saying that's a lot of cum.
I mean, we're still recording the show. I can still save and keep whatever sound clips I want, and they may just crop up somewhere down 2 years from now. All of a sudden, you're going to be walking down the street just hanging out, and all of a sudden you're going to hear over a loudspeaker nearby, "That's a lot of cum." And whomever you're with will just turn to you and be like, "What did you say, Brian?" And you'll be like, "My name is Loy Socks." And then you'll just bitch slap him.
That's quite the story.
Right?
What details, a story, Mark.
Details, man. You got to have details. Remember, once again, you can become a patron for just $1 a month. Subscribe at patreon.com/epicfilmguys. And now, on with the show. Hot damn. Well, speaking of burning things, I guess that's as good of a segue as we're going to get into the first Purge, which, because I have the AMC Subs A-list now, I go to the movies way more often. And I love that I can go to the movies way more often. I'm going to see Ant-Man and the Wasp again. I was supposed to go today. I got too busy. But I'm going sometime this week. And I'm seeing Skyscraper because I can. I'm going to see.
Are you saying Mamma Mia 2?
I will see Mamma Mia 2 because I can. I will see everything because I can. So I was like, I had one extra ticket for the week that I had to spend on something. The first Purge got it. Now, I've never seen any of the other films in this franchise. I had no idea what to expect. My massive exposure to the entire Purge phenomenon is the Rick and Morty episode where they go to a planet where they do a purge, which was way better than this movie is. I'll say this. There's a subtext to this movie that they want you to read into. So essentially, you know, the whole idea is they're going to do this experiment, which it pisses me off that the film keeps calling it the first experiment, almost as if they're winking at the audience, nudge, nudge, because there's going to be more. The other movies, get it? The first experiment. You wouldn't call an experiment the first experiment. You would call it the experiment.
An experiment, right.
Like, fuck you. But anyway, like, there's...
so they're prequeling
exactly
the shit out of this.
Exactly. Yeah. So...
Because it's a franchise now.
It is.
This was the fourth movie. It has a TV series coming out.
There's aspects of this that I really love. So they're going to unveil this experiment on Staten Island where for 12 hours, they're just going to let mayhem run amok. Any crime is going to be legal. That's the whole, you know, whatever of the purge. But the government is actively subsidizing, you know, paying people money to stay in Staten Island during the experiment, and they're offering these devices, these cameras to people, and incentivizing them, trying to incentivize them to commit crime, and there's monetary compensation for committing crime. Okay. And essentially what it all boils down to is it boils down to kind of a class warfare thing, which there's a huge, huge thing, especially nowadays, like in this country nowadays, that's a huge thing. There definitely is, you know, some, whether you want to talk about it or argue about it, whatever, there is class warfare, at least at some level, especially when you start factoring in minorities into the picture. Okay. So they take a predominantly poor, predominantly African-American neighborhood, and they want to do this experiment where they're going to just kill a whole bunch of poor black people or have them kill each other, essentially. And when the experiment kicks off, nobody's like, there's a couple of like bloodthirsty types that kill a couple of people, but most people are having parties, like having purge parties and like, "Woo, we can have a big block party and nobody can arrest us and whatnot." So then the government sends in fucking mercenaries dressed as KKK members and like white trash people to just straight up start murdering and mowing people down, you know, because the government's bad and the government's evil. And, you know, again, it's, you know, them trying to kind of quell that minority voice that they have disdain for, and that poor voice that they have disdain for. And these are all really, really good plot points, and really, there's a really good thematic depth that you could draw out of this movie if it wasn't a shitty B horror movie. Like, this would make a great drama. a fucking fantastic drama, but instead it instead relies on all these fucking shots of like these random people jumping out of the shadows at people just to scare them. This one, there's a whole sequence in the film where this one dude jumps out with a gun and he's menacing them, and then he squirts it. It's a water gun and everything. And it relies on shitty, cheap jump scares and just like,
yeah,
you know, the camera clumsily following these protagonists through the environment. There's some good performances in the film. Ilan Noel as Demetrius is probably the best. He's like the gang leader of one of the gangs in Staten Island. And when the mercenaries come in, he's like, fuck no, they're not going to do this to our neighborhood. And he like legitimately rounds up the whole gang, arms them to like go out and fight the mercenaries and protect the neighborhood. That's actually a really, really cool aspect of the movie that I really, really liked. But I mean, again, it's all part of like just a 90 minute, just piss poor excuse for a horror movie. Like, it's not even a good B horror movie, because I've seen, I mean, and I don't know, you guys are way bigger B horror movie fans than I am, so I won't claim expertise on that, but this is just B horror done badly. It's just like going through the motions. It's completely throwing itself from one thing to the next just so we can get to one bloody scene after another. There's something to be said in this film. There's something that this film wants to say, but it's lost in just absolute shoddy construction and craftsmanship. 4 out of 10. It just,
whoa.
Try fucking, this would make a great drama. Like this whole series, like just the thematic elements that you could wring out of this. There's a great drama in this, but
maybe the show will fare better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. This going to be what, like a 10 episode series or whatever. Like you don't get to learn anything about any of these characters at all. You don't get to learn anything except for in a very, very brief prologue about why this whole purge thing is happening. Like, you know, I would have loved to see some setup elements to that, but I don't think they would have worked in a film like this. This wants to go for just like your cheap slasher movie kind of thing, but then it wants to have all this. It's just
a message.
Yeah. It doesn't fit and it doesn't work in this vehicle. It needs to be in a better vehicle. Make a better goddamn movie with the same message. Like I said, this would make a fantastic drama series. Why is this series of films not a drama series?
That's a good question. I remember when the first one came out, I'm like, this is such a fantastic premise squandered by the most rote, by the book home invasion movie that I've ever seen. And the second one, I thought, while it took more advantage of its premise, which I appreciated, we actually get to see what the purge is like outside a rich white person's home, it was hindered by a necessity to always have a jump scare every few minutes.
Yeah,
and someone jumping out. And yeah, so it's sad to see that the series has not evolved beyond that, because that is something that I kind of lamented. Like, this is such a cool idea. It's such a great idea.
Let me pitch this at you. You know what's scary about the idea of these movies? The purge itself. You don't have to do horror setups, have people jumping out of the shadows, scaring people in these ridiculous masks, which make legitimately no sense whatsoever. None. They just put them on because it's a horror movie and they want them to be scarier. Period.
Yeah.
That's the only reason they fucking exist in the movie.
Well, and also to, like, I mean, because
I've never seen the other three, though. So, you know, you'll have to forgive me. This is me just viewing this film through just this film's lens. But, like, there's a moment in this film where they just mention it offhandedly. Oh, some of the people are putting on masks. We don't know why. Like, they're just randomly, like, in the context of just this film by itself, it doesn't make any fucking sense. Legitimately at all. They just do it.
Because crime's legal. I mean, it's not like you're going to get in trouble.
Because it's a horror
not wearing
movie.
A mask.
Yeah, and they're, like, positing, like, there's a quick throwaway line. Are they embarrassed that they're committing these crimes? And they don't want to be, what? Like I said, if it didn't have to crutch itself with these ridiculous horror movie tropes, there's a great drama in here. There's a really great, somebody get like a, get fucking Christopher Nolan to take the idea of the purge and make like a fucking like drama thriller out of it.
Yeah, it doesn't even necessarily have to be a drama. It could be a horror film just without all of the stupid cheap.
Yeah. Without the cheap horror tropes that
detract
from like the purge itself. The idea of just all crime being legal is scary the fuck enough as it is. You don't need to have, like, one of the antagonists of this film is the dude that has, like, his whole fucking face is, like, got, like, this shit cut into it, and they call him Skeletor, and he gives himself these Wolverine claws made out of syringes and shit that he's going around murdering people with. That it doesn't need that.
Right.
He's cool.
That looking. Sounds cool to me.
I mean, it sounds like, great to me. This movie you're talking about, Nick, sounds better and better by the moment. I might even want to go and watch
it. In a horror
thing.
Movie sense, it's fine, but like at the same time, they're trying to have a scene with him where he's running around and he's ripping people apart and, you know, whatever. And he's loving it because he's a fucking giant meth head and whatever. And he's going to get paid so much money for all these kills. But at the same time, then you come back to NFFA headquarters where they're positing on the philosophy and the morality of the purge and, oh, it's not working. Oh, it's not working well enough. And then conspiracy and then blah, blah. And all of this is packed
Let
into
me ask
like
you this.
90 minutes.
Let me ask you this, Nick. Is there a reference to Trump in the movie?
I mean, you could probably see the NFFA president as a Trumpian figure. Probably.
Okay, because the first poster of the film was a red hat.
Oh, with, I saw that, yeah.
Make America Purge Again.
I think so.
Something like that. It was like so on the nose. Yeah. So I was wondering how political they were going to go in this.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is like, the whole time, like the scariest parts of this movie to me are the brightly lit shots in trailers outside of, I mean, basically, you know, projects housing. You're getting low income minority people in here and you're basically asking them, man, don't you feel angry all the time? How bad do you wish you could just go take all that anger out and vent and kill people? Here's this thing. You get $5,000 if you stay on the island. Wear these special contact lenses, which glow because they're cameras. And then
okay.
If you commit crimes, you get monetary compensation. The bigger the crime, the bigger the paycheck. So it's like that's the scariest part about this movie to me by far. Not Skeletor coming out of the shadows and fucking like shit dripping out of his mouth because he's fucking like going through meth withdrawal. I don't know. But yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
I will be skipping it.
Justin's I'll be buying it on now. Ultra 4K HD Blu-ray. I'll be going to a convention and getting all the dude that plays Skeletor's autograph in my photo op with him.
Man, but yeah.
I don't think this is the kind of series that inspires fans and fandom, though. Like, people go
no,
see it because
no,
they're
making
it's
more
something.
Of them. So I don't think you're right. I think you're wrong.
I think people go see these movies because it's like, oh, I've heard of The Purge. It's another one. It's like Paranormal Activity. Like, people expected it every year, so they went to see it.
You'd
but
be
like,
surprised
you don't ever hear about like Paranormal Activity fans.
Yeah.
Like, they just don't exist. So I think it's the same thing with this series.
You'd be surprised at some of the people that show up at conventions.
Thank you very, very much, everybody out there, for listening. And I hope that you're enjoying these special Monday releases of content from Livestream for the Cure, Spotlights, B-Sides, Minisodes, whatever stuff we have. We just want to give you guys more and more and more content. Couple quick little news items before I let you guys run out of here. Over on YouTube, every single week now, when we do What Are You Drinking?, I'm going to pull those clips out video style, and we're going to release the beer reviews by themselves on our YouTube channel. So if you're not subscribed on YouTube, head over to YouTube. It's youtube.com/epicfilmguysny, and you're going to want to subscribe and hit that little bell notification so that way you can be notified whenever we go live. Okay? And stay tuned this month, hopefully, for the next episode or two in our Harry Potter Spotlight series. The next episode we're releasing is Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. And remember, if you're listening to this on or around release day, you still have time to answer trivia questions for the Chamber of Secrets and the Prisoner of Azkaban to get your entries into the drawing to win all 8 copies on digital Blu-ray. You got to get it in there. All you have to do is listen to win. So thank you guys very, very much. We'll see you Thursday for episode 152. For myself, for Justin, for the God of Podcasting, the A1 Loy Sox. Thank you very, very much, everybody, for listening. And we will see you at the movies.